Life sure is crazy here at James K. Polk Middle School. Northwestern University.
It feels like just yesterday when Vice Principal Krubb stole my ice skates from the lost and found. Good evening. I'm Iris Worthout.
And I'm Allison Rao. You're listening to NU's Declassified School Survival Guide.
I'll survive it, no doubt. Never fear. Bring it on. Break it down. What's in my way?
Your results may vary.
Thanks for tuning in to WNUR News' special broadcast, NU's Declassified School Survival Guide. This is WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. We're giving you a crash course on everything Northwestern, from the state of college athletics to the best places on campus to grab a cup of joe.
To kick things off, let's think back to fall quarter freshman year. Yikes. College classes differ from high school classes in their structure, frequency, and length. These changes can stress first-year students out. Reporter Poss Baum talked to students and a professor/first-year advisor about how to best navigate the transition.
In the midst of the many ways in which college differs from high school, housing, dining, friendship, and more, one of the most important transitions is sometimes lost: academics. College classes differ from high school classes in many ways, including teaching methods, class length, and evaluation methods. Many, if not most, first-year students struggle to acclimate to the new routine of college classes. In the next few minutes, you will hear firsthand accounts from students and a professor on their experiences with and tips for adapting to college-level academics. First, I want to lay out some common difficulties students face when transitioning from high school to college classes.
I'd say my classes, they utilize a lot of things that I've learned from high school, but they're a lot harder. You have to put a lot more thought into like using the techniques, like learn from each class, to like use the problems. It's just a lot more work than high school.
That was Zach, a McCormick freshman studying mechanical engineering. Johnny, a Weinberg freshman studying political science, noted similar struggles.
I feel like that in high school, you have the same class every day of the week. You had more time to cover your material, or you were able to have more time with like the professor or the teacher. But here in college, since you don't have that class every day, you really have to make sure that you take advantage of the time as much as possible when you're in the classroom.
It was a big like learning curve to get into. I guess going from high school with like being fine with like an hour or two of studying for a test, now I needed like 5 or like 8 hours for a test.
Both students touched on the difficulty of learning the foundation of their areas of study while in college, in addition to the more advanced concepts. While students gained a foundation in math, English, and science in high school, topics like engineering and political science are explored much less before college.
I'd say, especially for my engineering analysis class, it's just a lot more studying because I don't have like a foundation of knowledge already on it. It's just I'm learning it from the start of the quarter to now.
Everything that I learned, I feel like it was my first time looking at it and that it was new.
I also spoke with economics professor Janet Chang. She is a fall quarter first-year seminar professor, which means she also acts as the advisor for a group of first-year students during their fall quarter. She focused on how students' personal lives can impact their success in their academics when they first arrive at college during our interview.
You have to keep up with the schedule on top of the academic performance and also the social element. It's a lot. It's overwhelming. These past 2 years, obviously, we have COVID, so everything's aggravated. It's like using a magnifying glass to see how hard it is to transition to a new place and a new life.
On top of the usual stress of moving to college and starting a new set of classes, a lot of students struggle with a phenomenon called imposter syndrome. Harvard Business Review defines imposter syndrome as, quote, a collection of feelings of inadequacy that persist despite evident success.
I definitely did struggle when I first got here because seeing the averages on the midterms and the finals and seeing how they compare to what I got was a big difference.
Johnny talked to me about how being a first-generation low-income, or FGLI, student and a person of color plays into the imposter syndrome he experiences.
There's like lots of things that make it in people's heads, whether you went to like a large public school or whether you're first generation, whether you're low income, whether you're people of color. And that also plays into like maybe you feeling like you have imposter syndrome. Something that I experienced is definitely being intimidated when you arrive on campus, because obviously you notice like the social economical status of your peers, or you notice how much of a minority you are at times, and sometimes you may feel alone, and sometimes you may feel like you don't belong.
Northwestern classes aren't all bad, though. My interviewees had plenty of advice for incoming first-year students for how to do well in college classes.
A lot of the time, professors, they put up their slides or things like that before class. So, like, if you can go review the slides before class, and even if you can take notes on the slides beforehand, that way, when you're in class, you can actually pay a lot more attention to what the professor is saying.
The best attitude towards solving the problem is always to go to the professor, ask for help, ask questions. Don't be afraid of asking anything that you are not clear about. Don't assume things and just jump on it. I think that's usually the mistake I see among students, because they feel like, you know, I should know about everything before I ask the professor, but that's not the case. You are free to ask any questions.
One strategy Zach and Johnny use to study is to supplement their learning with outside resources.
I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos on the topics that I'm learning as I'm doing my homework, so then I can learn and then apply the concepts that I learned to my homework.
I have been to a couple of drop-in tutoring sessions provided by ASLA. I actually thought that they were really helpful. The people that are there, because they're students, you kind of feel more confident.
Johnny also had some helpful advice for overcoming imposter syndrome.
So I try to think of, like, what is the reason that I'm here in the first place, and I give myself that confidence, and then I'm ready to go about my day a lot better.
Specifically addressing FGLI students and students of color, he said,
have confidence in yourself to go out there. Just remember to always be yourself. Don't ever feel like you have to change for anyone else. Be true to who you are. Be proud of your background or your history, and just go out there and take advantage of all your resources.
Starting college is a huge adjustment for all students, including the transition to long, less frequent, and large lecture-based college classes. Hopefully you gained some helpful tips from this segment on how to succeed in your classes. As our guest advised, remember to supplement course material with YouTube videos and other online materials, review class notes before lectures, reach out to your professors. As Professor Chang said, they're here to help. Take advantage of university resources like drop-in tutoring and the Writing Place, and stay confident and true to yourself. College classes can be overwhelming, but they can also be incredibly rewarding. Use the strategies that are best for you, and your transition will be smoother and more successful. Best of luck to all members of the class of 2026 beginning their college classes in the fall. For WNUR News, I'm Passbaum.
How would you describe your freshman year, Allison?
Too much hair dye and not enough sleep.
Ah, yes. Never again will I stay at Maine past closing for a chem final.
Our annual fundraiser, Phonathon, is happening right now. This is the only time of year that we ask our listeners for support to keep our station on air and ad-free. Donate online at wnur.org/donate or call 847-866-WNUR. Your contributions make a difference. Thanks so much, and head to wnur.org/donate to keep us on air.
All right, coming up next, transfer students, listen up. This one's for you. It's a different experience for those entering Evanston from another university. To help with that, reporter Nick Song talked to his fellow NU transfers for advice for the newest wave of incoming ones.
My name is Helen Bradshaw. I am majoring in journalism. I transferred to Medill this summer.
My name is DJ. I'm a junior studying journalism, and pursuing the IMC certificate.
So I'm David Hu. I'm currently a junior here at Northwestern studying econ.
I'm Vanessa Kelson. I am a Medill junior. I transferred to Northwestern last fall. I guess, wait, now, oh my goodness. Was that 2020? When did we transfer? So sorry.
No, you're good. So what school did you transfer from?
I transferred from Emory University in Atlanta.
From Washington University in St. Louis.
From Boston University.
I went to the Oxford College of Emory before coming to Northwestern.
Why did you transfer?
I think there are a lot of reasons. I think one thing is Boston University's journalism school is very focused on print, daily newspapers, which is fantastic. But I had a lot of interest in broadcast journalism. Also, Northwestern is really the place to be if you want to be doing journalism.
I just thought that Emory was a pretty chill environment, but there were a few things on Northwestern to me was very generous for financial aid reasons. Emory to me was not.
I loved WashU, actually, but it's a really heavy medical school. And at that time, I started being more interested in becoming a better writer and dipping my toes into marketing. That was one thing that I knew I wasn't going to get. And I knew that Northwestern had great programs for both.
I really love Atlanta, but it is pretty similar to home. I love home, but I felt that in these years, I wanted to go somewhere further and be somewhere more different. I realized my freshman year that is what I wanted to do. And so I kind of sat there and I was like, ugh, okay. So I decided to apply to transfer.
So, you know, you've been here for like, I guess, a year and a half now. How have you found that experience?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely been polarizing, split between year one and year two. Year one was mostly remote, and then I was on campus for the winter and the spring. I would say right now, definitely no regrets, but last year, oof, was rough.
Everything was on Zoom, which was unfortunate because obviously anytime you are online or have the barrier of a Zoom screen, it becomes a lot harder to connect with people. So I think especially during our Wildcat welcome, which was entirely virtual, it was a little tricky to form those connections because people just weren't, I think, loving or embracing that fully virtual culture.
I had heard before I came that there was a lot of transfer specific programming. I didn't find that as much when I was actually here. And I think that is because of COVID. They weren't doing as many activities.
I think in a way, transferring during the pandemic made it easier for me. Everyone was just so willing to meet new people, make new friends. You know, it really pushed me to take initiative.
It was honestly kind of nice because I didn't have the pressure of like finding people to hang out with on campus because I wasn't there.
But I think as campus has started to come back to being in person, being able to have classes where you can talk to the person sitting right next to you and ask for their name and exchange contact info, it's made it a lot easier to feel like I'm a part of the Northwestern community.
How tight-knit do you think transfer students are at Northwestern?
Hot take, I would say that
I think it's a mix.
Although like I'm rooming with transfers, most of my friends outside of that are from various student orgs or from classes or from mutual friends, etc.
I know some friend groups that are like all transfers and that works really well for them. I know some friend groups, like my personal friend groups, where there are very few to no transfers and it's just me.
I would say overall though, I don't feel like there's this collective, every single transfer is in this best friend group and we all like hang out at the campfire site every Saturday. I think there are too many transfers for that to happen, which is a good thing. You are not a minority if you transfer in that sense.
If you want to be a part of it, there is definitely a big group of transfers that are always interacting and always reaching out to new transfers. I know for a fact that the TSO transfer student org group is very tight. And then I know the other half of the story is there are other individual transfers who kind of made more connections with the pre-existing like non-transfer population of NU, which isn't a bad thing at all.
But I will say when you're like with other students and they mention they're a transfer and you're like, oh my God, I'm a transfer. There is kind of a connection there. Like I was in an IMC class last quarter and on the first day a girl sat next to me and I didn't even know she was a transfer. And then like a few weeks in, we both realized we were transfers and we're like, oh my gosh. And now we're friends and not because of that, but it definitely was like a point of excitement, I guess, to realize that we were both from that position. So it can be like a bonding factor for sure. I don't think it's you have to have a transfer friend group per se though.
I had some people reach out to me during the first student org fair. I've just been joining different Zoom rooms to say hi to people. I remember one student org, as soon as I told them that I transferred, two people just out of the blue just jumped out, unmuted themselves, and I was like, hey, I'm a transfer too. And after the fair, they emailed me separately saying, oh, if you need any help adjusting to campus, just reach out to us anytime.
How easily do you think transfer students are incorporated into the larger Northwestern community? Like, how did you find that transition to be?
I know that I've talked to some other transfers who moved to a different university, and sometimes it sounds like they've almost been like brandished as like they weren't here their freshman or sophomore year, and so they're different. And I don't feel that way at all. I don't feel like I'm perceived any differently because of my background.
In general, I don't think people really care. I like the transfer experience and I like having the experience at two different schools. But yeah, there can be some opposition, I suppose, as to like not knowing some things. But I think more than anything, that's kind of perpetuated within the transfer community because we're all afraid that people are going to care about that. And it's really not a big thing.
You're not treated as like anything different. You're just treated as a normal student who, let's just say, in year one didn't do too much. So by that sense, you know, joining new friend groups or joining extracurriculars, I don't think transfers suffer, which I'm very grateful for.
I will also say it's by no means like you are labeled a transfer student. It's something that you can say like, oh, I'm a transfer student, and people would have no idea. It's like you are a Northwestern student along with everyone else who's been here the whole time, which I really love.
A final word. What do you think is the one piece of advice you would give to people who are incoming as transfers?
I didn't know how valuable and beneficial it would be to have previous experiences at other schools. People are interested in hearing about what it was like at another school, and I've really appreciated learning from my transfer friends about their previous experiences and communities.
Be more open than you probably are comfortable with, just because you really want to be immersed in your new community rather than being sheltered. And I think once you combine that openness for at least the first couple of quarters, you can really form a new self in a completely new environment, one that not many kids are even granted.
Already as a journalism student, it makes it very easy to just reach out to anyone on campus and say, hey, I want to talk to you. But even if you weren't coming from that journalism lens, people are so happy to speak with you. And the really cool thing about Northwestern is that there are people from the most insane, amazing backgrounds. The former ambassador to Georgia teaches at Northwestern, and all of their doors are always open. Fully take advantage of those resources at such a fantastic university.
I'd say don't settle. You have made the change in your college life for whatever reason that you felt was enough to go out of your way. Don't let yourself feel sorry for yourself and say, oh, it's already too late. All these other people have had an extra year adjusting to this college. You already knew it when you wrote that transfer application. Don't feel sorry for yourself.
Don't forget why you just transferred in the first place.
So I'd say make the most of it.
For WNUR News, I'm Nick Song.
So glad they all decided to transfer. Now I'm just waiting for Coconut Head to make the jump from the University of Phoenix. And speaking of mythical creatures, let's give a shout out to our iconic mascot, Willie the Wildcat. You know him, you may love him, but what exactly is he? Reporter Helen Bradshaw sat down with a wildcat expert to learn more.
It's Friday, and you just got out of your last class at Kresge. Finally the weekend, and you're feeling good. Time to head home and pretend like you don't have a pile of work waiting for you. You're about to walk under the arch, and then you see him. Lest you forget, you go to a Division I school. There he is to remind you. Willie. Willie the Wildcat. He's there taking selfies with everyone who's about to cross Sheridan. But getting a selfie is the last thing on your mind. You lock eyes. Yours, distressed. His, cartoonish. He looks like a wolf-cat hybrid.
What even are you?
You whisper in his furry white ears. He whispers back. Once again, perplexed by your school's mascot, you have no choice but to dig around. What even is a wildcat?
Yeah, it's really confusing.
That's Rue Campbell. He's a wildcat researcher and mammal advisor for Scotland's nature conservation agency, NatureScot.
So for me, a wildcat is, well, that depends again. You could classify it as any truly true native small cat that lives wild in the world. So that's a very broad description. We tend to use wildcat specifically to mean European wildcats in this country, because that's our only small cat that's native.
Northwestern hasn't always been the wildcats. First, there was Furpaw, a live bear brought to the games in a cage from the Lincoln Park Zoo. It wasn't until 1924 when a reporter at the Chicago Tribune referred to the football team as playing like wildcats that the team got its current name. Since, there have been other variations, including Wilhelmina and Winnie, but Willie is the one who stuck around. But there are several animals that fall under the category of wildcat. What is Willie?
My goodness. So some of them look more dog-like than cat-like, I have to say. Yeah, it looks like a cross between a fox and a cat, to my mind. That's quite interesting looking animal, actually. Could be a very unusual species of wildcat, couldn't it?
In the US, there are several species of wildcats, but only two look remotely similar to Willie: the Canada lynx and the bobcat. I suppose Willie could sound like a lynx, at least somewhat. Listen to the call used at football games. While they make a myriad of calls, here's one example of a Canada lynx. But there aren't Canada lynx in Illinois. But there are bobcats, which belong to the genus lynx. Here's what they sound like. So maybe Willie's a bobcat, maybe he's not. But if he's a wildcat of some kind, he probably shouldn't look like how he does.
Well, most of your listeners will know what a domestic cat looks like. And a wildcat is related loosely to the domestic cat. And in fact, wildcats form a group of, the European wildcat's one of a group of cats, the six species that are all quite closely related, and they include the European wildcat and the African wildcat. And then there's a few others, smaller species that exist there as well. And the domestic cat came from the African wildcat. The European wildcat and the African wildcat at some point, maybe a million years ago or something, split. And what we have within Europe is this large tabby cat that looks a bit like a domestic cat. It's about a kilo heavier, typically, so 20% heavier. What's a kilo in US pounds? It's about 2 and a bit pounds heavier. It's a stripy cat, tabby cat, and it's most crucially got a thick, blunt-tipped tail. So it's got this club-like tail that's really distinctive compared with your typical domestic cat, but it's still easily confused by a lot of people.
Even if they look cute and cuddly, wild cats are certainly not. In fact, they can be very aggressive, making wildcat a fitting name for a sports team. So much so that wildcat is the fourth most common mascot among Division I schools. While he might not be the most realistic, Willie is at least more cat-like than a few of these other mascots, but he has a lot of room for improvement. According to Campbell, Willie could take some notes from actual wildcats. Just because they may look similar to domestic house cats doesn't make them any less ferocious of predators.
Maybe you should update your mascot so it looks even cooler than it already does. So your mascot looks great, of course, but wildcats look so fantastic. I think it'd be quite special.
Maybe we should update our football game sound effects too. For WNUR News, I'm Helen Bradshaw.
Now that Willie's stardom has been acknowledged, let's turn to coverage of a problem us students all face: sleep deprivation. Getting the recommended 8 hours is tough when "and" is in our DNA, so many sub in caffeine to compensate. Reporter Izzy Pareja covers what seems to be the only solution to this campus-wide epidemic next.
Whether you're up at sunrise because you procrastinated on an assignment you should have started days ago, or you're just one more video mentality got you stuck in the TikTok rabbit hole until 4 a.m. once again, you've likely found yourself waking up in a fog and stumbling out of bed, regretting the choices you made the previous night. For the average college student, sleep deprivation has become an all too familiar feeling. As an incoming freshman with already terrible sleep habits and a raging caffeine addiction, the first concern on my mind when I got to Northwestern was where to get the best coffee on campus. That's why I assembled a team of fellow caffeine fiends to determine the best source of energy Northwestern has to offer. First up, we have Zella Milfred, a freshman in Medill and experienced barista who currently works at Brewbike.
So I come from a family where my parents are very big coffee drinkers. So I always grew up with them having a cup every morning. And when I was probably in like fifth or sixth grade, it's a little early, but my mom started making me little mochas and I thought it was the coolest thing. And then in high school, I started working at a cafe. So I've been a barista since freshman year of high school.
Next is Victoria Brown, a McCormick freshman and tea enthusiast who also occasionally drinks coffee.
I like tea a little bit more. My favorite's green tea, except I do drink coffee every once in a while, and I've been saving up my Starbucks stars, and I have 310 stars right now.
Finally, we have Conlon Harrington, a freshman in Weinberg with a need for caffeine stronger than anyone I've encountered at Northwestern so far.
My older sister and mom both drink coffee a lot when I was growing up, but my first experience drinking coffee was when I was in third grade and my older sister learned how to make coffee, and she kept making mochas, but it was like a lot of mochas, so it was like four of them, and she kept force feeding them to me until I got like really sick. So yeah, but since then I've had more positive experiences with the coffee, yeah, and learned to become love it, but like also it's like a violent grip on my life, so yeah.
Together we visited the main coffee venues Northwestern has to offer. We started with the classic and affordable Dunkin' Donuts, which can be found in the basement of Norris.
What are our feelings so far about the coffee?
It's very watery and it lacks a lot of flavor.
I would agree, you know, not very creamy, very watery. It kind of tastes like it's just like coffee with chocolate instead of like espresso, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't feel like there's milk in this.
No, yeah. That makes sense. I kind of agree with that. I feel like I've had mochas that are chocolatier, and personally I like sweeter coffee, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it doesn't even taste like there's caffeine in this or coffee at all.
Yeah.
It kind of just tastes like really watered down, crappy hot chocolate.
Do we know the hours of this Dunkin'? Cause like,
it's always very close to my
phone.
I know, it's
yeah.
Very random.
I haven't like figured it out.
And it's not open on weekends.
No, like, you barely made it.
Oh, okay.
I think they just kind of make it up as they go.
Yeah,
right. Like, oh, it's whatever the vibes of the workers feel.
That makes sense. I respect that. What do we rate this coffee? Like, scale
genuinely
1 to 10?
4 out of 10. It somehow tastes both like coffee and both like not. You know what I mean?
It's I really so don't believe like, there's any coffee in this.
Wow. Okay.
That's
that makes sense.
Theory
that's your
of the day. Yeah.
But it still tastes like more bitter than chocolate. You know, it's like very.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Dark chocolate, hot chocolate.
So true.
Probably second 4 out of 10.
4 out of 10. Yeah. What about you?
Like 2 out of 10.
2 out of 10.
It's
okay.
Not hidden.
Me personally. Yeah, I'd say 4 out of 10 is a good rating.
Next was Starbucks, also known as Norbucks, located just above Dunkin' on the main floor of Norris.
Yeah.
No, it tastes it's a lot really more like coffee than chocolate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I like it when it's smooth.
I can, I don't know. This one tastes, I feel like it tastes less watery.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Creamier and
creamier,
smoother.
Exactly.
It's like sweeter. Yeah. I'd say it tastes like more like chocolate. Like, I feel like I can like taste the texture of the chocolate a little bit. Like, it's just like, I don't know, it's thicker. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely sweeter, but it still tastes somehow watery. I can't really taste caffeine, if that makes sense.
I feel like, Conlon, you have an expression right now.
Yeah, so the last one, the Dunkin', tasted like it was made with like watered down Swiss mint. This tastes like it's made with like that like $5 hot chocolate you buy when you go into a lounge when you're skiing.
So
it's
true.
Like, it's like a little bit better, but you know it's like still not there. You know, there's something missing.
Right.
Yeah.
What do we rate this?
I genuinely say a 5 out of 10. Like, I don't think it's so like that much better than the last one.
Let's say 6 out of 10.
Say 4.5 out of 10. Yeah, it's better than the last one. It's definitely drinkable, but it's still missing like the coffee that like I go to Starbucks for.
Understandable. I'll give it a solid 5 out of 10, I think. Yeah.
Then came Brewbike, a student-launched and run cafe located on the second floor of Main.
This is a mocha?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so I guess we're trying mochas from everywhere. That's what, that's our decision. Very nice texture.
Great adjective.
Thanks.
It tastes the least adjective. Like water of all of them.
Maybe,
definitely
the creamiest.
Yeah, maybe I just come to the realization that I don't actually like mochas. It is the best out of the three.
Right. Mm-hmm. What are our reviews, 1 to 10?
I think like a 6.5. I like it better than the other two, definitely.
I'd give it an 8.
Probably 8. No, this is very good.
Final rating for Conlon.
I'd give it a 7.5.
Ooh,
it's pretty good.
We then tried to order coffee at Lisa's unsuccessfully, as they were not serving coffee at that time. However, we were able to end our day with a tasting at Sargent Dining Hall, where we created our own homemade mocha using Zella's recipe.
All right.
You want to go first in the coffee review?
So we tried a new experiment. Zella, do you want to tell us how you made this coffee?
Sure, yes. And you helped, you know.
I did.
Izzy gets some credit as well.
Thank you.
But no, we just took dining hall coffee. We mixed in a nice packet of hot chocolate mix powder. Yep.
Yes. Homemade and mocha.
A little milk. You had a little milk in there?
I did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here, we're going to try it. Let's go. I like it. It tastes like hot chocolate.
Okay, if we compare this to like the Dunkin'
Donuts. Better than Dunkin'.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, dining hall coffee in general, I feel like it's good. It's free. And it's like decent for being free.
Yep.
Conlon, what are your opinions on your iced coffee?
This is the go-to iced coffee on campus for me. Mm. I don't know why, but it's a kind of watery coffee, but it's, you know, that's fine, like, because it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This makes sense.
What do you think of this mocha?
I'm so sorry, but this mocha, this dining hall mocha, is, like, making me nauseous. Like, I genuinely, I don't know if it's the fact that we've been drinking coffee all day, like, continuously, but I genuinely feel like I'm going to hurl.
Oh,
okay. No, not actually. Just a little bit nauseating. Just a little bit.
Not actually. Literally, but not really.
Yeah.
How do we rate the dining hall coffee experience?
I'd say like 5.
Okay.
5?
Fine. Yeah. Let's separate like the mocha from like regular every day. So the dining hall mocha recipe, how do we rate that? I'd give it like a 6.
I'd still say 5.
4.5. I think it's like the same as Starbucks for me.
Okay.
5.5.
Okay, interesting. And then regular dining hall coffee. You've never had it?
Okay. Like out of any just normal coffee on campus?
Yeah.
Maybe like, it's honestly not that bad, I feel like.
I don't know.
Like,
no,
I
have
a Keurig, and I feel like it's the same. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's free.
I think the freeness adds a lot to it.
Well, it's not free, but like it feels free.
Right. So, it's kind of free.
Maybe like a 6.
I'll say 6.
Yeah.
We got a 5-6. 5-6 is a good range.
Here you go.
10.
10.
If there's one thing to learn from our coffee review, it's that Northwestern offers many places for students to fulfill their caffeine needs. Whether you prefer affordability, quantity, or just want some really good tasting coffee, you'll be able to find a place on campus for you. For WNUR News, this is Izzy Perea.
Our annual fundraiser, Phone-a-thon, is happening right now. This is the only time of the year that we ask our listeners for support to keep our station on air and ad-free. Donate online at wnur.org/donate or call 847-866-WNUR. Your contributions make a difference. Thanks so much, and head to wnur.org/donate to keep us on air.
After all that coffee, you should be more than ready to scream you rah rah, no matter how cold it is at Ryan Field. For what team? Wildcats, duh. Sports and school spirit are classic parts of the college experience, but Northwestern isn't like most other schools. Reporter Alex Harrison talked with editors from a few Northwestern sports publications about the sports culture on campus, so any Wildcat fan can know exactly what they're getting themselves into.
Northwestern may not be known as a sports school, but that doesn't stop many students from becoming huge Wildcat fans. But before you get into NU sports, there are a few things you should know about. I spoke with editors at several sports publications here on campus to get the full crash course on Northwestern sports for any new Wildcat diehard.
Well, welcome all. Thank you for being here. Just to start us off, can each of you introduce yourself with your name, your year, and what position you hold at which publication?
I'm Patrick Andrus. I'm a junior, and I'm the sports editor of the Daily Northwestern.
Yeah, my name is John Volk. I'm also a junior. I am one of the two sports directors at WNUR Sports.
I'm Daniel Olinger. I am a junior, and I'm one of the three editors-in-chief of Inside NU.
My name is Coop Daly. I'm a junior. I am the sports editor at North by Northwestern, and I'm also the grinder of the Northwestern University Wildcat Marching Band.
First up, I figure the most essential part of the college sports fan experience has to be the chants and traditions. So going around again, just to hear from everyone, what would be your go-to must-know tradition or chant for any new Northwestern fan?
I mean, probably the easiest one is the Move the Chains chant, like after each first down in a football game. It's one that I think they specifically teach you it, like during Wildcat Welcome when you're like your first week here as a freshman. So you have to just be ready to like move your arms, do the whole cymbal clashes and the point. It's just a very basic one that it always happens.
Well, I mean, I'll keep it with football is, and what do we call it? The growl? It's something like that when,
wow.
Yeah, exactly. The other team gets to third down. Everybody's got to shape up their hand, right hand into a claw, hold that up in the sky, and just make the most distorted attempt at like a wildcat growl, like, it's really something to behold.
I would definitely make a point to actually learn the lyrics to the fight song because it is a pretty good fight song relative to like all the fight songs. That's definitely something you should make an effort to learn and avoid the prep poem. When I came back for winter break and all my friends made fun of me for still knowing the lyrics to Ohio State's fight song, the team I grew up with, or not yet knowing the lyrics to Northwestern's fight song. So avoid that at all costs.
I'm a big fan at the basketball games. There's chicken sandwich that gets chanted for opposing free throws just to have the other team try to miss and get the entire student section Chick-fil-A. That's always just a really fun time.
Another big thing for people to learn about is Northwestern's conference. So Northwestern plays in the Big Ten. We're the only private school in the conference, and we happen to bump up against some pretty big name sports schools. So what would y'all say Northwestern's niche is in the Big Ten? What role do we fill? Where do we fit in?
We fill the role of not belonging here. This is the role we fill. Like, so we have 8,000 undergrads. Ohio State and Indiana have 60,000 undergrads. Where I can walk the length of this campus in 20 minutes. I think both Ohio State and Michigan, you would have to take a bus. We are geographically smaller. We're smaller by population. We are smaller by fan base. Our smallness is somewhat what makes us, but you definitely, the first thing you get a sense of when you come here is how small the fan base is, and you get used to very quickly being guests in your own house.
I would say, like, if you're specifically thinking about how the teams themselves play, like, I mean, women's basketball, especially over the recent years, established a really strong reputation in the conference, winning it 2 years ago. Historically, the men's basketball program is not great. So most teams kind of rightfully think they roll into Evanston thinking they're going to get a win when they play the men's basketball team. And the football team, it was the same thing for a while, whereas like in recent history, even though the slap past year wasn't great, the Northwestern's emerged as a solid team and more like a team that a lot of the usual conference contenders are always a little bit afraid of. You go on Twitter to like the week of Wisconsin Northwestern games, just filled with Wisconsin fans dreading like a 19-17 loss to Northwestern because they've seen it happen over and over again at the worst possible time.
I would say we're like the quirky little brother that has a very, like, we're part of the family, and then anyone messing with us doesn't draws the ire of the Big Ten. But at the same time, it's just, we are kind of not stepped upon, I want to say, but kind of like overlooked on a good occasion. And the other thing that they Northwestern really tries to accentuate sometimes to a fatal margin is that we're not a state school. We're Chicago's Big Ten team, to the point where if Illinois beats us, they try to take that back from us. But that's something different. We represent Chicago. We represent the smaller. We represent the little guy. We represent everything. And it's pretty fun being David when you're taking on Goliath, especially knowing who wins half the time.
Yeah, I think that underdog mentality aspect is really important. Whenever there's a good Northwestern team, it's always going to be not the most athletic players, not the most physically gifted players. It's going to be the really smart players and the players that are going to, you know, grind, put in the work day after day after day to eke out these improbable victories, but the ones that everybody's going to root for.
So I want to hear, and I'm putting y'all on the spot, your favorite Northwestern meme or stereotype of the sports teams themselves, the fans, you know, anything. It's anything goes.
I'm going to take the one that I'm sure popped into all three of your minds is from that NCAA tournament run for the men's team back in 2017. The most upset child you will ever see, hands on his head, crying because his Northwestern Wildcats lost. I think that sums up a lot of the school's athletic history.
Also from that run, there's the Shrieker, who I'm not sure she's been back to a game since that whole thing happened, but there was a Northwestern fan who during basketball games would shriek so loud and at such a high frequency, it would be picked up by every microphone in the arena. And it was really, really interesting to see people take free throws and hearing that go across the field. But then they were like, yeah, no, you can't do that.
So there was a man named Nick McCall. He's no longer here. But when we were freshmen back in 2019 and the team was not good, a lot of people pointed to how bad the offense was. And a lot of it was at the fault of 12-year offensive coordinator Mick McCall, who was eventually fired after that season. But now any head coaching search comes up, any team says, hey, they're looking for a new head coach, you can expect our account and plenty of other Northwestern accounts to let you know that the other team is probably looking to hire Mick McCall, former Northwestern offensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah. We can go with that. Alex Spanos, the strength coach, is a character. If ESPN or Fox wants him easy, if they want to phone in an hour on a Saturday morning, they'll just pan to whatever Northwestern is playing and say, wow, Alex Spanos is fired up.
My final question for everyone here today is, if you could give one brief piece of advice to any new Northwestern fan, what would you tell them?
Learn to cope, I would say, learn to cope with defeat. You need to learn what you're getting into ahead of time. It's rewarding, but I'm just issuing that stark warning right there.
I kind of have a similar idea, Patrick. I'll phrase it differently in terms of just calm down. Like, Northwestern's going to lose games, especially in probably two of the sports people are going to be watching a lot of men's basketball and football. You'll watch them lose a lot of games. And some people have plenty of normal reaction to this, but others are like freaking out and trying to figure out why they lost to Ohio State. And it's like, why did they lose to Ohio State? because the other team is better. Like, sometimes that's the very simple explanation. You don't need to like try and develop main character syndrome here as a Northwestern sports fan. Like, it's okay.
Shameless plug, join the band. Non-shameless, I would say, just enjoy the ride. I think it's like, just come to the games and have a good time. I mean, half the time Wildside's probably giving out some free shirt. Chances are the student section's going to chant something completely insane and out of pocket. You're going to have a really fun time. It's just come enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably just give the most concrete, like, go do this, is support the women's teams. Field hockey, national champions. Women's lacrosse, won 5 straight, won 2 more this century, went to the Final Four last year. Softball, just the other day, walk-off home run against number 3 UCLA. You know, when you're starting to pull your hair out over football, men's basketball, remember, there are a lot of other great, great athletes on this campus too.
All right. Thank you all so much for coming out and talking with me. I think we have well prepared any new Northwestern students for the ride that they're about to endure.
Oh yeah.
Peace out,
good
y'all.
Stuff. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you guys.
For Chicago's Big Ten team, this is Alex Harrison, WNUR News.
And sports culture on campus is rampant now that we're nearing March Madness. Good luck to men's and women's basketball as they near the end of their seasons. For those of you who are just joining, this is WNUR News on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago.
Our annual fundraiser phone-a-thon is happening right now.
This is the only time of year that we ask our listeners for support to keep our station on air and ad-free. Donate online at WNUR.org/donate or call 847-866-WNUR. Your contributions make a difference. Thanks so much, and head to WNUR.org/donate to keep us on air. It's currently 30 degrees here in Evanston, and in recognition of that, I'm wearing sweats and sneakers, more of a Pete Davidson look. Allison, who are you wearing tonight?
My dad's college sweatshirt and jogger, so like more of an Adam Sandler vibe.
Two iconic comedians in the same room. But clearly, we need some help in the fashion department. Maybe taking the wise words of Rihanna, "She can beat me, but she cannot beat my outfit," might help. At Northwestern, Stitch Magazine and NU Thrift set the fashion scene on campus. And reporter Justine Fisher spoke to representatives from both to get the inside scoop on campus style.
Walking around campus, it seems like everyone is wearing the same puffy winter jacket. But underneath all the layers, and when the temperature isn't below zero, what is the fashion scene like at Northwestern?
You better work!
School of Communications senior Sarah Gronich is the creative director of Stitch, Northwestern's fashion publication. She always saw fashion as a part of her identity.
I think in general, fashion is just really fun. It's a really good way to, like, express sort of your identity and your emotions and your feelings, and it's just a really fun way to like play with the expression of self.
For Stitch's quarterly print publication, Sarah works with the team to develop ideas, source models and clothing, and secure a location for shoots. The vision behind the shoots is sometimes influenced by campus fashion.
I think it's really interesting always to see the different aesthetics that different students take on. You know, there's the athleisure wear, there's the dark academia, there's the, the cottage core, there's the street wear. There's so many different kinds of fashion that you see around campus. And I think that's always, I mean, for me at least, it's very inspiring, not only for my work at Stitch and like, not only do we like pull inspiration from campus at Stitch, but also just in my own closet. Like, it's fun to take inspiration off of other students.
Weinberg freshman Adrienne Scheid is one student infamous for her bright pastel outfits. She is commonly referred to as Pink Beret Girl on Yik Yak, where people post sightings of her around campus.
Someone said that they saw me in Norbucks and that, like, week 7 was saved. And it's like, that means so much to me. The fact that I can save somebody's week just by, like, existing. Or I think someone said, too, like just saw Beret Girl in Deering. I'm gonna, like, I'm motivated to, like, work on my stuff now. Like, that is unbelievable to me. Like, if I can make other people happy just by, like, what I'm wearing, like, that's crazy to me. And, like, that I love more than anything else, is making other people happy.
Adrienne has been wearing her pink beret since they bought it in Paris as a sophomore in high school. But unlike back home, Northwestern students have embraced Adrienne's style.
I grew up in rural Wisconsin, and people, like, weren't very, like, open to my style. Like, there was definitely, like, safe places for me and, like, groups that, like, accepted me. But never in my life would I have expected the unbelievable amount of kindness that people have shown me here, and like every single second of every day I'm grateful for it. Like, it seriously, like, it keeps me going.
Naturally, all of this unique style on campus begs the question of where students are buying their clothes. School of Communications senior Sam Liu is the president and co-founder of NU Thrift. She started the club because there weren't many thrifting options around campus.
She realized that there were really no accessible thrifting options around campus for low-income students because, you know, we have Crossroads, but their stuff is kind of expensive, and the closest Goodwill is like a mile and a half away, and if you don't have the car, it's not accessible. And we also noticed that Northwestern did not have a textile recycling source.
The club hosts a quarterly pop-up store. They use donations of clothes from students to open the store.
We also strive to, you know, make casual clothing affordable for low-income students, because we have like Cat's Closet for like business and formal wear that's run by the NCA. It's like free program, but there's not like the equivalent for casual clothing. And in addition, the revenue that we make we donate that to student organizations.
Sam shared many of their favorite thrift stores. Some are in Evanston, but many are in parts of Chicago like Wicker Park and Lakeview. For students looking to express themselves through fashion, Northwestern hosts a unique niche of clubs, publications, and welcoming communities. In Evanston, Illinois, Justine Fisher, WNUR News.
I have one thing to say. You better work.
I feel more stylish already.
Style comes in many forms, but for fellow businessmen and women on campus, it's a successful startup in a sleek workplace. Northwestern's Garage is an incubator to several startups for students looking to experience a slice of Silicon Valley in the Midwest. Listen to reporter Maria Jimena Aragon discuss this tech haven with five NU startup founders.
A little piece of Silicon Valley on campus, Northwestern startup incubator The Garage is home to a diverse community of entrepreneurs and their big ideas. But what does it really mean to nap in right brain? And are the phone booths really soundproof? I sat down with five Northwestern students and founders to give us the inside scoop on what it's like to balance those roles and pulling all-nighters on North Campus.
I'm Charlotte Oxnam. I'm the founder and CEO of Cue the Curves, and we are redesigning the plus size shopping experience to make it more positive and accessible.
I can jump in next. My name's Kevin Casper. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Inferno Guard, and my team is working to reimagine remote wildfire detection and notification for large-scale landowners.
Hi, I'm Anna Cornell. I'm the CEO and founder of Acorn Genetics, the first completely private at-home genetic testing company focused on providing accurate, affordable, and again, 100% secure genetic testing.
Hey guys, I'm Charlie. I'm the CEO of Litterbox, and we focus on providing wildcats with secure and affordable summer storage.
Hey, I'm Harrison Larner, founder of Eight in the Box Productions. In the past, we've helped college athletes, brands, and startups with social media video. Right now, figuring it out.
So what is your favorite part about the physical space and also the community that you are part of?
I will tell anyone that comes to the garage, the bevy is my bread and butter. The bevy is our free flavored seltzer and water machine. And it is the only reason I haven't died of dehydration on multiple occasions.
Well, okay, one of my other favorite things about the garage is sometimes like the surreal conversations I have with people, I really get a kick out of. Like I was talking with someone like the other night and I was like, okay, so if this happens and this happens, then like, you know, your company would be worth $10 million. All that to say, there's kind of something fun just about having these kind of conversations, like pretending you're, you know, like adults, you know, and just having these conversations at like such a young age is like such a privilege and such like such a cool experience to have.
Harrison, stop blowing our cover. We're totally all super serious adults who understand everything that we're doing. How dare
you?
Well,
you are right.
That the rest of us, that any
don't
of us
speak for the rest of us.
Going blindly.
I'm bumbling through life. Okay.
So obviously you guys are part of the garage. You definitely have different roles and procedures, but you're also Northwestern students at the same time. How are you balancing coursework while also being part of a team and innovation and all the different things that are happening in the garage?
Say for better or for worse, like being around the garage, people who are in the same position creates a new sense of normalcy as to like what that expectation looks like and how to balance it. And I think stepping out of that bubble can sometimes be challenging because you see people who might not have the same amount of work, but it's nice to be surrounded in a group of community that kind of has a similar work pace and requirements for moving things forward.
I think one thing that's really interesting too, is the fact that I think I'm fortunate enough to just kind of be on the Zoom call with like all of the people here are just like garage superstars. Like you guys are all just like really, really dedicated to your startup. And I know for a lot of people that are like getting into entrepreneurship, kind of like I was last year, it was really scary to kind of think that like, oh my gosh, like, am I going to have to drop out of school to work on my startup? And, you know, I think that the Garage does a really good job of like promoting their community of like startup founders. But at the same time, it's really important to know that the Garage community also extends to the people who like also, you know, want to really put school and academics towards their focus and kind of want to like learn about like how they can be an entrepreneur, you know, just outside of the Garage. I think that that's something that's really interesting and exploring.
All kinds of people are represented in entrepreneurship, and it's not just like it. And by that, I don't just mean like types of individuals, but also like types of startups. Like, it's not just limited to the Cody Silicon Valley boys. It's not just limited to kind of the traditional college startups, but like you have, you know, Infernal Guard and Q the Curves that are very different kinds of startups, all like fostered in the same space. I think that's a really cool thing.
It's also a safe space from the tech bro culture, which as a woman in engineering is something that I really sought out pretty soon after getting to Northwestern. I really wanted to find a space that was supportive of me and a little bit healthier and a little bit more balanced and a lot less misogynistic. And I found that the Garage really gave me that space where I was, you know, put on equal footing and didn't have to prove myself anymore because I was a girl.
I wanted to pivot a little bit into the next question of what is your go-to snack for ideas? What fuels you all on those late night innovation and brainstorms?
The Garage has free popcorn. I've devoured so many bags.
And M&Ms and Oreos and gummy bears. And when you come to the Garage planning to only be here for 2 hours and then end up on like a 6 hour, you know, dark hole deep dive into something, that is your only sustenance, and it is life-changing.
Sometimes you got to make your way downstairs to the vending machine and get a Monster Rain, specifically blue raspberry flavored, with the watermelon sour patch, and then walk your way back up. And then that's probably when you start crying because you get too much caffeine in yourself because it's all rain, but usually it works.
I have another question about the space. What is the best place in the Garage to cry?
My favorite place to cry at the Garage is after hours when the janitor's there in the other room and you're in the phone booth on the other side in the resident side. So you can cry in peace, but then the janitor comes in, you have to have it together by the time that happens.
We've been there. We've all been there. And it gives you a time frame for your crying. It's useful.
I love that janitor. I love him. Like, that man was like, I've been there so many late nights and it's just been like him and me. And he always like says hi and he's just the best.
Like Kevin says, these phone booths, but they're supposedly soundproof, which is really cool. So that's like a good place to cry, you know, if you really just got to like let it out. But the problem is whenever I'm at the Garage, which is like when no one else, where like only a few other people are there, you can like hear a pin drop in that room. So those soundproof booths don't really work. So if you just are like if you're like a, you know, noisy crier, like people are still going to hear that. Like nothing is really soundproof.
So from your own experience and then also from your time at the Garage, what is a typical startup starter pack? So what does the fit look like? What's in the backpack? What are you bringing to the space?
I am somewhat infamous for saying I've got a genius idea.
I would also say every charger known to man, or in my case, no chargers. And then I have to steal other people's chargers, mostly Kevin's. What else is in the
Garage? Can confirm Charlotte's taking my charger twice. Would like to confirm as well. That?
A secret in the starter pack is Ruman, who works on Rhetoric, has a phone charger on his desk. And when no one's there, you can take it and return it same day before he arrives.
You can't say this on the podcast. He's going to stop leaving it out there for us.
I think the number one is like help wanted computer science intern. Because like, I haven't seen every single person is like, hey, I want to get some comp. They're like, I have a crazy idea for an app. Let me just hire some computer science people to go and build it.
So wait, is this like the Hunger Games for CS majors? Like what are we talking
if
about?
If you are a CS major, you are like quite literally treated like a god within the Garage.
I wined and dined a potential head of development at Chipotle to try to convince them to join my startup because of their programming skills. Like, you, in so many business models, like, you just need those people and you need those people to be invested. So you're like willing to do whatever it takes. I've made some desperate moves to try to find developers in the past. I mean, cold, you know, Zoom DMs, haven't gone quite to Canvas, but I've gone to pretty great lengths.
One thing that I'm a big believer in that I've come to realize is there's no better time to try and start a startup while you're in college. I think there's not a lot of risk that's associated with it. You have a lot of creative freedom to go as you please and try a variety of different things. So I think that's been important for me. And then the second thing is, I think it's important to kind of just leverage your current resources and reach out to people in your network or reach out to people who have expertise that you might not in order to fuel your business forward.
I'll second what Kevin said about cold reach outs. It's not that hard to talk to CEOs of like startups and companies if you just like find their email and say, hey, like, I'm a student, and like, hey, can I have 15 minutes of your time or something like that? You'll be really surprised.
Yeah, I would just say my advice if you're trying to get involved is definitely to just have fun with it. That's kind of what I did. You know, I have just kind of a lot of fun at my company, and I think that gets reflected, you know, to your customer base, to your user base, all of that.
Also, like, what's the worst thing that can happen if you fail, right? You gain 6 months of experience, like, running a business. Like, you gain key leadership and technical skills that are going to transfer over to anything you could possibly do. While it hurts to fail and it sucks, you gain so much from just trying that it's a waste to not try.
I think, like, the best piece of advice anyone ever gave me and that I could give anyone is, if you're on the edge, if you're thinking about it, if it's something you want to just dip your toe in, do it. Like, talk with a couple founders, go to office hours, show up to an event, join the Tinkerer program. It's a 5-minute application, and just get the ball rolling, and it's amazing what will come of it.
From San Francisco, California, this is Maria Jimena Aragon, WNUR News.
Well, folks, that just about does it. We hope you can put those tips and tricks to good use. After all, it can't be worse than seventh grade. For more news updates and reports, follow us on Twitter at WNUR News, Instagram at WNUR News 893, and Spotify and our website, WNUR.news.
Our producer tonight is Zach McCrary. Our reporters are Pass Baum, Nick Song, Helen Bradshaw, Izzy Pareja, Alex Harrison, Justine Fisher, and Maria Jimena Aragon. I'm Iris Warthout.
And I'm Allison Rauch. You've been listening to WNUR News on WNUR FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. Thanks for tuning in, and see you back here next week.